Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinema.
Hey, everybody.
This is Rachel.
Hi, I'm Josh.
And you're hitting the very special 30th episode.
Wow, what a milestone.
Is it a milestone?
It's a milestone.
It's a milestone.
Have you ever been to the mall and seen those commemorative stones they have for, you know,
community partners? Nobody believes you that you meant to say milestone.
Nope. I have to commit to it. This is my life now.
We're going to be committing to something. Trey's not here because, as I've said before, he's too busy for re-release intros.
Off saving the world, I'm
sure. Not too busy for you, our listener. Too busy for everyone. So don't be offended.
No. Don't take it personal.
This is a re-release. And if you're new to Cash Grab Cinema, maybe you're scratching the old noodle being like, re-release? What are you talking about?
What is that?
What's that about? Well, these are formally released episodes under the old banner that we used to have, but we don't anymore because of spicy law problems.
If you want the tea on that, that's episode one.
Yeah, that's episode one. There's not a ton of tea because it's secrets. This is the placeholder episode between the last new episode and the next new episode, which will be New Moon.
Twilight New Moon.
And the wait will be worth it because all three Twilight episodes will be released back to back. But you got to wait because...
It's going to be an extravaganza.
It will be, but yes. You got to be patient because editing takes time and I can only do about 30 minutes before my brain melts and I have to go do something else. You understand. My fellow neurodivergents, you hear me.
It's not that hard to revive her, though. When you see her slumped over, just rub a little ice cream on the lips. And...
I don't like ice cream. Who are you? Who do you think I am? No. You bring me ice water.
Yes.
And then treats of various nature.
Yeah,
I thought you loved me. But these Twilight episodes, as we stated before, are going to have amazing giveaways.
Yes.
So much fun Twilight and not actually. I was gonna say not Twilight related swag, but it's all Twilight related swag.
Folks, right now we have 30 buttons we're giving away.
There is 30 buttons.
All told. They are limited release.
They're limited release because we made all of them.
And they'll each come with a Mark McGuire rookie card.
No, they won't.
They won't do that.
But if you're interested in this very fun Twilight giveaway situation, each Twilight podcast episode that we're going to put out, so that's New Moon, Eclipse, and Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2, which will be one episode, is going to have their own dedicated giveaway.
Yes.
Josh, do you want to know how to enter the giveaway?
I am so... Is it possible for me to win?
Of course not, but right. Don't you want to know?
I want to be part of the game.
Of course. Yes. Okay, so you're going to go to our social media handles.
Mm-hmm.
We are on Twitter and Instagram. Both are at Cash Grab Cinema. You can also follow our link tree and find everything there. Just clickety-clack-clack.
Yep.
And you're going to get Internet all noises. The very easy rules to follow each giveaway. So stay tuned for those. Definitely go follow so you don't miss anything. And if this is you in the future and you've missed the giveaway, say you listened to this in July 2021,
mm-hmm.
Well, the giveaway is over, friend, and you missed it. Why are you not subscribed or following us on the socials? Well, don't worry. There'll be new giveaways. Don't worry. Go there now and see if there's a new one. Maybe one about like tree bark or something.
Or space lasers.
Who knows? Maybe we could get Trey to draw a ghost dog. I don't know.
Ghost dog from the movie Ghost Dog, directed by Jim Jarmusch.
No, I was thinking more like...
Because that's Forrest Whitaker, ooh, and I would love that.
It should be a ghost dolphin. Because you remember when we told Trey that the dolphin in Blackwater, the original Flipper, yeah. He unalived himself?
Right, right.
It was the worst fact I've ever told Trey. And I did preface it with, you don't want to know this. And he's like, no, I can handle it.
I can take it? What?
Just because I love dolphins and they're my favorite animal doesn't mean you can tell me something that'll ruin my day. And then I ruined his day.
Oh, no.
Anyways, here's the seeker. This is for you, original flipper.
Yeah, this is the first episode ever, so just be prepared for a lot of those wonderful cutaways to the word cash grab that, in ways that don't fit, because we
say it a lot. I'm not
going to
apologize for my greatness. Anyways, back to the original sign-off. This is for you, original flipper. R.I.P. Flippy. R.I.P. Hello and welcome to Cinemas.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Rachel.
Rachel, what is a
cash grab?
Well, according to many expensive books I checked out at the library, a
cash grab
is a book, painting, or recording produced merely to make the content creator money. Ugh. Shameful.
Shameful. Absolutely shameful. Well, tonight we are going to be looking at one of the best instances of a
cash grab.
Oh, well, I mean, we paid money to see it.
We sure did. We gave up valuable dollars and time of our lives.
We saw this bad boy in the cinemas. We paid movie theater ticket prices. Probably consumed popcorn.
At a premium.
I do believe this was an evening showing. We didn't even get the matinee break for this.
We got as screwed as you could possibly get.
Okay, so the
movie we're talking about tonight is called The Seeker.
What is he seeking?
Dark is Rising, which came out in 2007. It was directed by David L. Cunningham.
You might not know him from such films as Beyond Paradise, The Path to 9/11, strangely enough, To End All Wars, I have heard of that one, and a Little House on the Prairie TV miniseries.
That's excellent. Yeah, that was for the reboot. That's not the original.
So back to The Seeker. Right. The Seeker.
Yeah, sorry.
Keep starring Alexander Ludwig. Ludwig? Ludwig. He went on to get super ripped and be on a couple of Hunger Games, or just one. I'm not sure. He's a side character, but good for him. Christopher Eccleston.
The Ninth Doctor.
Ninth Doctor, a legit actor. A few legit actors. Mm-hmm. They read this over and they're like, hey, I need money.
You know what? I need a new hot water heater, and I'm going to do it.
Those tankless ones are pricey.
They are. Yeah, so this kid, Alexander Ludwig, when we first started rewatching this, I suppose, I said to myself, he looks just like every single kid I saw in every 90s toy commercial.
Or Capri Sun commercials.
Or Sunny D, for that matter.
He is the star, the protagonist, Will Stanton. You will hear time and time again through this movie, he is the seventh son of a seventh son.
Yeah, if you missed it the first nine times.
Don't worry, they'll come back around. They'll come back around. I really love the way this movie starts. Like, it is a Hallmark original Christmas movie. It is the most forced Christmas scene in the summer I have witnessed.
It's clearly 60 degrees outside.
Right. 60 degrees in England.
So, but it is absolutely, it's dripping with Christmas. There is every possible Christmassy thing. Mm. And you have this completely overacted, overdone, set of extras celebrating Christmas break.
Yeah. Can I touch real quick? The screenwriter of this movie seriously wrote Trainspotting. The screenplay for Trainspotting. Seriously.
Whoa.
Yes. And you're just like, how is it so bad? Like, the writing is... You know what? I wish I could say it's the delivery. It's not.
Now I know why Christopher Eccleston got on board. He said, like, he was like talking to his agent, like, all right, Mike, what's going on next?
Well, we've got this one script. It was written by the guy that wrote Trainspotting. Oh, perfect.
He's like, I'll say no more. Say no more.
I'm in.
If you say anything else, I will fire you as my agent.
Tell them I will take a pay cut to do this film.
Why is your accent fluctuating wildly between British and then just a melange of other voices you've heard in your life?
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Citizen of the world.
Let's go in. School's getting out. Forced, super forced Christmas scene. This goes on for 15 minutes. That's a huge highlight in this movie. Nothing's happening. nothing's happening, and I don't know what's happening at the same time.
Yeah, it's very kinetic, and like the choice of like really awkward fast cuts really doesn't mesh well with the kind of feeling they want to make right now.
Mm, strange.
There's the red scarf.
Oh, yes, the girl in the red scarf. Sorry for that clapping. Can we please talk about her? She is 14, going on 40. Like, the love interest they got for this legit 15-year-old boy is like Disney's blank check. Like, as a kid, you would think, like, man, he's getting that hot older woman. As an adult, you're just like, oh, she's a pedophile.
It was disgusting.
Right. She's going to be on the news, but not for good reasons.
I feel like when they call cut at the end of the day, she's like, all right, great, I got to get back to my kids.
Like, they exchange some glances, and then they get an invitation to a Christmas party as they're getting off the bus, him and the other kids. Getting off the bus, a Rolls Royce, is that a Rolls Royce? Slows down, gives them a Christmas party invitation. Like
The village millionaire just stopped by to
be like, hey, children, this doesn't look suspicious. You didn't see me on America's Most Wanted. Take this candy I'm offering you.
Take this wax-embossed $40 invitation.
Then we're introduced to his slew of brothers and one sister. And it's weird. They bill the sister throughout two-thirds of the movie as a really important character. Like, so much foreshadowing that she's going to be so necessary. Don't worry, she's not. You don't have to hear from her. Just ignore her when she's on the screen. Totally unnecessary.
I get the fact that he's supposed to have this big family, and it's, you know, this montage of all these people as we introduce them. But, you know, the movie's already complicated. We already have no idea what's going on or why.
Oh, it's so complicated because it's the second book in a 5-book series. They were like, don't need that first one.
I heard it was the 5th book of the 5th series.
One of the brothers, Gregory Smith, who it comes off so creepy.
Yeah, he does that little stash beard. What
yeah,
is
the
that?
Creepy little wispy goatee he's mm-hmm. got going on. He was a legitimate child actor in the TV show Everwood. The one of the brothers in The Patriot, the brother that gets killed in
He's in The Patriot.
Yeah, he was good in it too. It was pretty good. I liked it. But like, he has quite an impressive resume, and he's like, yeah, just throw on this garbage, I guess.
The other thing, if I can't go back to, like, kinetic chaos of this film, is that for some reason, and it makes, there's no rhyme or reason to it, there are all these sort of Terry Gilliam-esque Dutch angle quick whip pan shots that make no sense and are really, really, really disorienting. And I get that they're supposed to be, like, that's when you use that shot to be disorienting, but it doesn't make sense in the story. Like, you're disoriented and you're like, why? I thought this was
what makes
family.
Even less sense is the cuts they choose. Like, all right, like, sometimes you'll be cut from one room to another and it feels very jarring. Like, how did I get here? They'll cut from like one event to a totally different one in the middle of the next event. Like, whoa.
Can we talk about dogs for a minute and this kid's relationship with dogs?
Yeah, do they love them? Do they hate them? Don't worry. Watch the whole movie. You'll never know.
Yeah, it won't amount to anything. Mm-mm. And
they're supposed to be an American family living in England, but this film was filmed in Romania. Makes perfect sense if you don't think about it for a second.
It's weird. It's like all the hallmarks and all the British tropes that you get in this film are directly aimed at people who had no idea what
yeah.
England.
They've
is
never
like.
Even watched BBC America.
Right? Yeah, this is not that crowd.
Mm-mm. Totally trick them. Also, it's like during casting, they forgot that all these people were supposed to be related and didn't even bother to try people who look even similar.
Right, that's true. For the first 15 minutes, we were convinced it was an orphanage.
I thought it was. Their house is a mansion that looks like garbage all at the same time.
Yeah, they're obviously rich and
poor.
Completely in abject poverty.
Just like Rachel and Friends, she's poor, but lives in a super posh New York apartment.
Right. Going back to this weird thing with the dogs, there's actually a lot of things that the film uses in this way to basically foreshadow something that never comes.
In this part here, we are at about the 10-minute mark. There is literally a shadow foreshadowing things. Like, that's not how it works. You're being so literal. And he's sleeping in the attic now because another one of his brothers, the sixth brother of the seventh, whatever, his other brother came home and took his room, and he's in the attic, which doesn't sound so bad until you realize there's just, like, no windows. It snows on him at one right. point. And he doesn't think, you know, I could go sleep on the couch. Nah, just better stay here, freeze to death.
I mean, it's the UK. You know it rains there, right? I mean, so what does that mean? Is the attic holding back all that moisture from the rest of the house? Everybody else is fine.
But that's the darkness that's rising, the mold.
Snowed and rained on. The whole action of the film really kicks off when Will goes down to the local shopping mall, because, you know, the UK is crawling with giant shopping malls.
It is like a four-story, it's like Mall of America big.
By the way,
which is a real mall, look it up, it's huge.
This mall that he's in looks suspiciously like the school that was just letting out a few minutes ago.
Right. Anyway. Yeah. And then he's gone to the mall to buy a gift for his only sister for Christmas. Touching. And he is stopped by mall security, kind of like when Bart Simpson stole the video game, if mall security turned out to be two creepy dudes.
Super creepy dudes.
So creepy. So creepy, in fact. They're the kind of creepy that you warn your children, if someone this creepy approaches you, you should, you know, run away, like, fight your way out. They're definitely trying to kidnap you.
Scream stranger danger.
Yeah, but don't worry, Will Stanton willingly goes with them. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, sure. Even though I know I didn't steal anything, I paid £5 for this hideous necklace for my sister.
I respect that he did that. That shows that he's the seventh son of a seventh son. It is my goal to, in this podcast, say seventh son of a seventh son as many times as it was said in the movie. Wow. And I've got 77 more to go.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible. But anyways, these two mall security guards take Will Stanton to the most terrifying interrogation room that you might ever see in cinema.
Yeah, it's like a mall, but it immediately becomes the deepest, darkest basement of a torture chamber.
Yeah, it is a concrete bunker, flashing fluorescent lights, and then as the lights flash, the security guards turn into monsters.
Mostly indicated by their teeth.
And their eyes turn completely black. And he can see that this is happening, and keeps sitting there and talking to them like, oh, I'm sure this will work out fine.
Yeah, this kid's reaction time is way off.
Way bad. It's not until one of them literally leaps across the table and attacks him that he decides to get up and run. But now he's been imbued with magic pushing powers?
Yeah, that's my big question is...
There's no explanation for that.
What did he do to acquire those? Has he had them for a while? How has he never... not pushed anybody for years?
No, it's his 14th birthday.
That's what
it is. But they did not explain that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but don't worry. It still feels like basically like a cautionary tale and an after-school special based on puberty. You know, like this whole film is some sort of weird, twisted metaphor. Yeah,
that puberty is horrible and you should, you know, kill yourself now.
Yeah, that's good.
And then he's made it back out into the mall in the safe, warm glow of commerce. And he still has the crappy necklace he got his sister.
What I like about the film is that for the first time in cinema, this film really takes a closer look at fractals, you know?
Yeah, it's so important. And then after the Great Mall...
Escapening.
After the Great Mall escapening, he goes home. He's been scratched by the monster mall security guard. And there's his dad rushing off to work. And he's like...
Inside the house, by the way. He works from home, or it looks like...
Right, but they don't give that away, that he works inside the home. And the boy's like, oh, I really need to talk to you, Dad. I got problems. And in a way, a 14-year-old boy typically would not approach their parent like, I'm mixed up. I'm, like, freaking out here. And his dad was like, talk to your brothers. I'm busy working in the same house as you behind a shower curtain.
There's not even a... They couldn't... it's Romania. They couldn't afford a door on the set. It's really sad. But you know what? They may do, and I like that.
That's just so classist of you.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, Romania. Well, you know what? I blame Romania for letting this film happen on its soil.
Now we're going to the party, taking the longest time. Oh, swirly circles everywhere. Why? Who knows?
Yeah, but we know there's something special about Will because he keeps seeing swirly lines places.
Yeah, I've never witnessed swirly lines before, so I know that I'm not special. I'm not the seeker.
They got some grade A talent in this film.
Yeah, let's just go over the
shittiest lines I've ever heard.
I just want to quick touch on the cast, other than, you know, the two kids that we've already talked about. But there's also, there's James Cosmo, Braveheart, Trainspotting, the new Narnia, Troy, Wonder Woman, Trainspotting 2, Ben-Hur, the new Ben-Hur. But lots and lots of solid credentials. And of course, everybody's going to put out some garbage from time to time. But even his line, like, he's just does such a bad job in this movie.
Yeah, there's Ian McShane. Of course, we know him from, I mean, my go-to is Hot Rod. He played the stepfather in Hot Rod. But he's been all kinds of stuff. John Wick 2.
Kung Fu Panda.
Pirates of the Caribbean. And for an agonizing 1 hour and 40 minutes, this guy, all he does, it's like he has 7 lines.
I'll do this, but maximum 50 words.
He gets paid by the word.
By the word.
I mean, but over and over, all he says is, "You are the chosen one. The 7th son of a 7th son. You must find the signs. Use them, Will." That's basically everything that he says in the film.
Right. With no explanation whatsoever. And now we're being introduced to the villain, the writer.
My main man, Chrissy E., as he's known on in his hip-hop circles.
I didn't know he was still going by that name. Yeah, he wants to bring the darkness. He wants the signs. They want the signs. Everyone wants the signs. It's really never explained very well.
No.
What the signs are, what the sign, if you get the signs, how do you utilize the signs? Who knows? But Chris Eccleston, to prepare for his character, it looks like they just put a wig on him, a black cape, and he read the lines from a sign in the back or something.
He was also working on, once he actually read the script, he also, his lines were cut down a bunch, and he just said 7 things.
No, I mean, but he says so much and says nothing.
Yeah, no.
So much of this movie is nothing.
Absolutely nothing. It's the most flimsy. It's not even a real premise. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because a premise has to have some sort of foot in logical reason. You know, in the world, and nothing. They're just saying words, signs, chosen one.
To really get this movie, you would have had to read The Dark is Rising whole series of 5 books, which you probably haven't because it was written in 1975.
Right.
Not saying that it didn't stand the test of time, but also Harry Potter was out then. Harry Potter.
Will meets this motley crew of aged wizards. I mean, what are they?
I have no idea. No clue. How do they know about the signs? Why has nobody stumbled upon this magic signs room ever? It's a giant underground mansion-y thingy with a door that's clearly found by anyone who wants to find it in the woods.
Well, there's so many, you know, castles and ancient structures in the UK. You can't walk into every one you pass.
People just jaded by the majesty, like, tear it down.
Definitely. Yeah, so there's a lot of noise about nothing.
Nothing. Honestly, you could just touch on the rest of the movie from here. So he finds out he's the seeker. He has to find the signs. He finds the signs. Oh, guess what? 14-year-old, 40-year-old witch or girl is actually a witch. Surprise. Surprise, she's a bad guy. One of his brothers is temporarily, like, it's the only bit of drama in the whole movie. So one of the brothers, the actor who's in The Patriot, the hint of drama that was there, it could have been something, is turned for a moment by the writer, the Chris Eccleston character. And you think, like, okay, something's gonna happen. It doesn't. He is bad for a nanosecond. Back to good. They find all the signs. And then there's the showdown. Josh, the showdown.
Epic gets tossed around a lot these days. To mean something is epic. Well, here's the weird thing is that it's... Like, I say there's no premise. It's a very simple premise. Apparently, there's this bad guy, Chris Eccleston, who we all knew is bad.
Right.
Just by looking at his face.
Right.
And he wants to envelop the world in darkness. And then...
Which, no explanation. What does that mean? Who knows?
Why is he doing it? Is it a vendetta? Was he a lover scorned? You know,
what? You'll never know.
You'll never know. It's never... There's never any sort of explaining. You know, it's rare that I want exposition in a movie. That I really crave it.
You yearn for more. Because normally it's the opposite. Like, okay, we get it.
But this is just a series of things happening, and it's barely sort of connected.
Like, at one point, he Google searches the light and the dark. It immediately comes up. The first hit is about the mythology of darkness fighting light for space.
He then proceeds to use $50 worth of ink in the inkjet printer. To print it all off and take it to his dad, who... Okay, I'm sorry. I had such a problem with this in the movie.
Hmm.
Is that... This dad character, first of all, he's incredibly negligent. I mean, his son basically looks like he's in the middle of a panic attack. He's just like, just ask your asshole brothers that are dicks to you all the time. Just ask.
They hate you.
Go cry to them. God.
It's a strange force.
Why do we have to be Catholic?
It's a strange force Cinderella-esque relationship they threw in here with no purpose whatsoever.
It goes
nowhere. So much of this movie goes nowhere.
Okay, so then it's revealed that the father is a physicist. He's a professor of physics at some place in the UK. And
yeah, I also, am I supposed to buy it that this doctorate in physicist who's teaching at a university in the UK doesn't have enough money to fix his roof?
So, the core of his research, it seems, is this fascination with the light and the dark and fractals. That's about the extent of the explanation that goes into this research. And it's handed to the audience like, there you go. There you have it. Light and dark and fractals. He's a scientist.
Accept it, Jim. And then another thing, another moment of maybe drama is one of the older curmudgeon seeker protectors, I guess you could call them, dies in a crow attack. You did not mishear me. He was murdered by a murder. A group of crows is a murder.
He's the seventh murder of a seventh murder.
But then at the end, after the flimsy grand battle between this child and an adult on a horse with a sword, who loses, the sword-wielding adult loses, the character who was murdered by the crows comes back and pulls a feather out of his mouth comically.
It's really weird. And not to say that, I'm not saying that the imagery in this film is in any way actually scary, because it's not. There's nothing genuinely scary about it. So,
I mean,
for all the parents out there listening, it's kid safe. They'll be bored as crap, but it's fine.
They will be like, Mommy, why are you forcing me to watch this?
So, no part of it's dark, but I feel like...
You could use this movie as a punishment.
It would be perfect. But it's like this movie would have benefited from either being like a super safe PG, you know, a little bit of magic and a little bit of, you know, bumbledygoo. Or if it was like a...
Bumbledygoo.
Or if it was just like a hard R and like that crow attack was like the most graphic, disgusting, you know, sinew pulling thing you've ever seen. That would be awesome, actually. That would be worth the ticket price.
Well, I mean, no. It would only distract you from how terrible it is.
No, if every part of it was super, super dark, you know, and they really committed to it.
No, you can't hard R this. You're not going to be able to Deadpool this movie into being magic.
Maybe not. Maybe it's unsavable.
It is unsavable. Hence why they never made any of the other movies books into movies.
Weren't you telling me that the author saw the movie and was like genuinely disappointed and hated it?
Yeah, the author of the original works, this is based off of, Susan Cooper, she had a lot of problems with it.
But it wasn't until after she watched it, and by that point it's too late. I mean,
it's on celluloid.
Right. Like, apparently the actor from the book to the movie are wildly different in age. Like, her character was prepubescent, and she really thought that was important because, what do you know, like, kids are just, like, bumbledygoo yeah. before puberty and, like, wanted to make him seem really more helpless and helping himself. Oh, and then we find out he has a twin.
A magical twin.
A ninja twin, if you will.
Ninja twin.
Why does he have a twin? No reason. Just to give you some silly thing that his parents never told him, or his older brothers who are old enough to be adults. Like, they are older teenagers. Never told him he had a twin that was abducted in the night. These are the worst parents. If you live next to these people, you would consider calling CPS.
Yeah, and then, so he finds out about the twin brother, and then he confronts his mom about it, and they're talking about it, and, you know.
And she fake cries!
She fake cries like crazy.
She has no tears.
If I was this kid, I would basically be like, alright, they totally offed this little bastard.
They killed my brother. Who are they going to kill next?
Yeah, I can't believe I've survived this long. I'm packing a bag tonight. I'm out of here.
Yeah, they won't even notice, though. They're the worst parents ever. And then after the big fight, the grand finale fight, he gets his twin brother back.
And it's like the least, it's like the least climactic thing that could possibly.
Yeah. It's like, and it's two clearly, dudes walking. It's clearly the actor in a wig. A very bad wig. Well, they found that wig in a dumpster.
It's funny, like, even back in the days of, like, 1960s TV, when they used the same person and gave them a twin, you know, they would shoot it in certain ways that, well, yeah, it was kind of obvious at times, but then at other times...
Like, the Parent Trap, the original Parent Trap, not the Lindsay Lohan one.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, and it was convincing, and...
And just camera tricks.
Just camera tricks. This one, it's, like, the most rudimentary, it's like you told a... You know, the 15-year-old...
You told the PA, this is his first movie, his first job, we need this kid to look like a twin. He found a wig in his mom's box of wigs. She has a box of wigs. Slapped it on this kid. Done. Done. And for some reason, he's wearing the same red scarf that the 14-year-old, 40-year-old was wearing. What was the point of that? And then they go home after the grand battle. Nobody questions where they have been. Even the twin they thought was still alive. He comes home with his twin. They thought he was dead. And his parents' reaction was like the lamest half smiles. Like, oh, hey. So there's Tom, our beloved son we thought was dead for 14 years. Well, put on an extra plate.
The dad, like, looks at the two of them walking up from behind the blinds, and he gives a nod of approval as if he's in a Folgers commercial. You know what I mean?
That's the level of excitement he can bring himself to with twins in your cup.
Actually, I'm pretty sure I saw this guy in a Folgers commercial, so he might have just been, that might have just been residue.
Muscle memory.
He had been doing that all day the day before, and he was just like, you know what, I'll just go with my Folger smile. That's good enough. Good for him. He's alive now. Good for him.
Hey.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm going to go back to my work, and my work is very important.
It's so important.
If you need something, ask your brother.
I mean, I barely have enough money to pay for my giant family with my doctorate degree, but, you know, one more mouth to feed, I guess.
If that kid that I thought was dead needs anything, just ask your brothers. I know you probably can't talk or do anything because you've been trapped in a glass bubble.
He was trapped in a snow globe with the writer for 14 years.
From the age of 6 months to 14.
Yeah, but he's perfectly fine.
Perfectly fine, it's well adjusted, pretty happy, really.
The movie has so many questions. You'll be left with so many questions like, was he in that glass bubble the whole time? How did he not die? Was it magic? Why is there the seeker? You never find out why this exists.
If Chris Eccleston, sorry, the writer, although I'm sure Chris Eccleston is also this evil. Just kidding, I love you, Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, he'll definitely...
I keep mispronouncing his name because it's Eccleston.
He'll definitely be listening to this and crying.
Totally.
I just wanted to entertain the children.
But if he's so powerful enough to basically just shroud the earth in darkness and kill everything... Right.
I imagine everything would die because no sunlight, right?
Why does everything hinge on this one 90s commercial looking kid? So there's like at least three scenes in quick succession too. So I'm pretty sure they were all shot on the same day of Chris Eccleston coming out on his horse and basically saying, "The time grows near. I need the signs. The seeker is finding the signs." And it's just, it's so much like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that lady from Power Rangers that mm-hmm. was the evil lady. I don't know enough about Power Rangers to name her. Anywho, I don't know. She just sort of cackled.
Elizabeth Banks plays her in the new movie.
Does she?
Yeah, I think so.
I could see that. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, a lot of unanswered questions in this movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything about why the signs.
Also, this is one of those movies, and I know the UK has tougher gun laws, but they are in the countryside. They do have rifles for hunting. It's one of those movies that you're just like, well, just fucking shoot that kid then.
I mean, he was in his house. He touched his leg and made it turn all black and gave him
and
intense
And his mom
pain.
Was out of the room because the writer dressed as a doctor and had to come and check on this seeker because he hurt his ankle. And then his mom was like, "Oh, doctor I've never met before. I'll leave the room now so you can be alone with my minor child."
It's really, really, it's just a flimsy piece of cinema. That's my, you know.
That is generous. A generous description is to call it flimsy.
So I think we've come to the natural conclusion of the seeker. The question remains, was it a cash grab? Or a genuine attempt at cinema that just fell flat?
Definitely a cash grab.
They read the script, all the actors, except for the kids maybe. Like, okay, and where do I pick up my check? It doesn't clearly say anywhere.
You guys should add something at the end of the script where the large truck full of money that I'll need in order to actually do this film can be located. Said Chris Eccleston.
Aw, man, I feel so bad for Chris Eccleston because if you watch it, it's a very genuine performance, even if it is bad.
Oh, he was bringing... It was ninth Doctor level charisma.
Yeah. So, how do you feel watching this the second time? Glad? Was it worse? Better?
No, in a lot
how
of...
How does it stack up?
In a lot of ways, I feel like the movie got us twice because, well, the first time we paid our money and
no,
spent
see,
our time.
No, see, wrong. I'm going to cut you out there. It's worse. Because we are 10 years older now. Our time is precious and limited. And not only that, we're aware of that now.
We're 10 years closer to death.
Yeah. Every birthday is now a stepping stone to my early grave. I want an oak casket, please.
So we both think it's a
cash grab.
And that's it. You know, yeah. If you're interested in this film, it is available for free on the YouTube. So you don't have to spend money on it.
Just your precious, precious time.
Yeah.
Over an hour of your precious time. The first 20 minutes are at least hilariously bad. The rest of it is just like, it's just getting through it.
It is slogging through the most flimsy of all premises ever.
It's painful.
It's terrible.
Yeah. It's so hard to watch. But hey, good luck to you who out there who decide, man, I'm going to go watch The Seeker to go to sleep to.
Well, I liked Signs, and I hear that there's a lot of sign talk in this bad boy.
If you want to justify it to your friends why Signs is an amazing movie, make them watch this first. And then they'll be like, whew, this Signs. M. Night, I can't say his name, M. Night Shyamalan, he's killing it. Join us next week. We will be reviewing
Disney's Blank Check. Everybody, it's gonna be a good one.
It's gonna be a good one. Follow us on Twitter at
Cash Grab
Cinema, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening.